I'll call these my rock and roll poems. They all make reference to some old rock and roll song to do part of the work that they want to do. This one's called Limbo Rock. The lines for the water slide seem to snake away for days. Sleek brown bodies steam dry between rides. Their parents, pink lumps slumped into inner tubes, bump lazily down a curvy turquoise culvert. It must be 100 degrees today, even under this tree. I creep deeper into the mottled shade, crocodile out of water. I can hardly breathe. The limbo rock rollicks down from the boardwalk. Every limbo boy and girl, all around the limbo world. Overhead, the trees gyrate wildly in the rising heat, trying as I am to reach the cool languor of autumn, the freedom to let go. I try to picture a limbo moon above. It comes out electric blue, a black plastic sky oozing away from its wavy, hot edges. I try to imagine what it is like to fall in limbo love. I think it is something I am too old for, but would like to try. Through the hazy heat, I see a thin, lithe boy, tanned deep, leaning back, knees bent, duck-stepping up to the limbo stick. How low can you go? I wish suddenly I were 16 again, or at least had worn my bathing suit today. This must be just what these leaves will be thinking about in October on their way down to the cool, beautiful ground, wishing it were August again, that they could gyrate wildly one last time in the unbearable heat. I head out into the sun. Sweat pours down my chest. My daughter has been splashing around in the crowded pool. Now she runs to me, shivering, her lips blue. I swoop down and scoop her up, my knees buckling under her weight. Old, young, too hot, too cold, parents, children, each inching along in their own separate lines. Even the leaves, in such a big rush to get where they won't want to be. On a day like this, if you stop to think about it, none of it really figures. My daughter and I sway and laugh to the last few bars of music all around the limbo clock. Pretty soon, she doesn't shiver, and I don't sweat. Hey, let's do the limbo rock. This is called The Night Before Roy Orbison Died. In Miss Gargano's ninth grade art class, I just drift off, daydreaming myself into the back seat of her black Pontiac, the late September heat abating in a lake breeze, Roy Orbison crooning in dreams over the car radio, both of us grappling with the only things left between me and the ecstasy of the 155 bell snapping me out of her lap and back into the last row where I go grudgingly limp all the way to algebra, never to measure even one of the curvy wonders Miss Gargano kept treasured under her regimen of lingerie. In the summer of 1963, weeks before the Beatles were anything more than a few teeny boppers screaming in Liverpool, I must have pumped 100 nickels into the jukebox in the back of the Sugar Bowl just to hear that sleek tenor, wire tight, ooh, pretty woman. Bought myself a slick black fake silk shirt, sat in the back booth, dark and mysterious, waiting for my own pretty woman to come walking back to me. Except in the second it took her to think about turning around, Lennon and McCartney started holding everybody's hand, Ringo pounding harder and harder on his drums, one at a time, then row after row after row, down Pennsylvania Avenue, ratcheting our dreams all the way back to a tiny flame in Arlington, a day's worth of drumming to remember it by, to forget, Roy Orbison singing, crying, all of us into the streets, to war. 8 years later, the Sugar Bowl closed for good. I pulled that shirt from the corner of the closet, threw it in the goodwill pile. The late 60s, suddenly history, bombs exploding all over Cambodia, collars buttoning down, belts tightening, the long, slow leak of impeachment, Roy Orbison singing Only the Lonely on the double album I bought as if he were already dead, or I was. And then 15 years later, there he was, on Saturday Night Live, that frying pan flat face, the slicked back sculpted sideburns, still jet black as the plastic glasses hanging halfway down his nose, squeezing out the slight smile of a man too shy or wise to ask for anything. Then that voice, haunting, smooth, still chilling. Last night, the night before Roy Orbison died, his dark blue heart about to break one last time into unearthly song, I woke up in the back seat of Miss Gargano's Pontiac. The decades between us passing so fast, not my hair going gray, not the drag of gravity under flesh, not even Roy Orbison about to encore with It's Over, could come between me and my sweet destiny. I almost don't know what to make of anything tonight. I think my heart is breaking, but I am not sure. I think of all I have missed and missing right now to finish this, the way life keeps rushing off up ahead before you have time to finish asking for a second date. A better raise, a simple favor, just a single straight answer. Without even thinking about it, I find myself saying a prayer for Roy Orbison. I don't know why. I am sure he is a happy man and probably always was. I play his songs over and over on the stereo. No one with a voice like that could ever have had his heart broken for good. If there is a heaven, he is singing there now. Or better, in the back of the Sugar Bowl, leaning against the jukebox, listening to his own sweet voice fill the room. Some pretty woman, Miss Gargano for all I know, halfway to the door, unable to decide whether to turn around. I see him there, frozen in that moment, a serene early 60s smile still on his face, nothing but a shy, kind man without a worry in the world, because the whole time, her heels clicking against the tile floor on her way out, another man, immeasurably more handsome, waiting in the street to meet her, my heart pounding faster and faster, fearing for him, for myself, for everyone who waits deep into the quiet night for someone else to decide and then walks home alone. Because the whole time he knows just how the song goes and how it's going to end. I think of Roy Orbison, dead less than a day, that voice rushing out through her car window as she drove away from school to somewhere, someone, a boy of 14 could only begin to imagine he could be or be like. Ooh, pretty woman, diminishing into the distance, as close as I thought I'd ever get to Miss Gargano's back seat until the night before Roy Orbison died. This one's called Morning Rush. The big storm is all but over. A final few flakes float down in super slow motion, falter in front of my windshield, and stall there, unwilling, it seems, to fall. Traffic crawls and halts, crawls and halts. Hundreds of us hung up in long lines slung from hilltop to hilltop, all the way to town. I will be lucky if I get to work by noon. I stare down at the broken line that inches past beside me. At this pace, it seems so precise, so individual, so breathtakingly graceful. My radio blares, "Wild thing, I think you move me, but I want to know for sure." I try for a while to think of one person who might move me for sure. Instead, I find the driver in the car stopped momentarily alongside mine, staring blankly over at me. He looks as if he might be watching me on TV, bored, blasé, the remote poised, ready to zap. I rise up, wind into my wickedest air guitar and scream along with the trogs, the two panes of glass between us, not anywhere near thick enough to keep him from hearing. "Wild thing, you make my heart sing. You make everything groovy." He jerks his head forward, pats down his hair, and scoots a car length ahead, looking for another channel. I slide back down into my seat and think about maybe heading home, having accomplished already about as much as anyone has a right to expect, at least for a day like this, at least for a guy like me. It's called After the Fireworks. Muzak in the men's room at McDonald's. I could swear it's Mungo Jerry's in the summertime, all Mantovani'd up to sound anonymous. I try to remember the words. In the summertime, when the weather's fine, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. The tile wall inches in front of my face is shiny and new, dark, dark blue with silver specks. Just like the fireworks last night, 3 or 4 seconds, say, after each explosion, hundreds of leftover flecks of light about to evaporate into a backdrop of stars above the sheer black lake, my daughter following each one all the way down with a loud, drawn-out, monotone, "Wow." Over and over, "Wow. Wow." I can't remember ever enjoying them more. I thought, hey, there ought to be fireworks every single night. All of us gathering in the dark on the hill to stare into space and wait for whatever comes next. The twirly gold ones that whistle and fizz. The red and green ones that sprawl out in long, elegant falls. The rat-a-tat-tat ones like a fast scatter of flashbulbs. The ones that blow up 3 separate times and go every which way, and you wonder how anyone could have figured out how to make them do that. None of us in any rush to get to that last climactic clatter and flash, the deadline pressure of destiny disconnected for a few seconds from any particular necessity. Like out on the highway, at night, by myself, 17, passing every car in sight until there isn't one taillight as far as I can see, and I just keep driving until I can't think of anything to do but turn around in a driveway on a farm, trying to reassemble for my long-term memory what that first French kiss just felt like, looking up through the windshield at so many stars. The moonless sky swathed in layer after iridescent layer of light. By the time I turned back to say goodnight, it might as well be last Saturday afternoon. My daughter singing to herself on the rope swing in the apple tree while I push her higher and higher until in my mind's eye she comes back down all dressed in white and stops halfway down the aisle, smiling, waiting for me to walk with her to the front of the line where we order one kid's meal, Sprite, one burger to go. We get back on I-80, crank up the radio, some station just humming in over the noise. Of all things, it's Mungo Jerry. We're always happy. Life's for living. Yeah, that's our philosophy. I smile at my daughter. We put on our shades, lean back in our seats, and fly. Dee-da-dee-dee-dee, da-da-da-da. Dee da dee da dee da dee da dee da dee. This one's called Neither Here Nor There. Let's say, for argument's sake, you're driving from Pittsburgh to Forest City, 299.4 miles now that the Altoona bypass is open. And the man you started out as this morning, getting your daughter off to school, saying goodbye to your wife and son, hasn't even begun yet to imagine the man you will need to be by tonight, greeting your mother and sister on the porch, heading down to the hospital to sit and wait. So somewhere on I-80, let's say for argument's sake, it's a mile west of Lamar. You're just driving along, and all of a sudden, there you are, staring back at yourself from the passenger seat, neither one of you knowing yet quite how to break the awkward silence that divides you. And then, on the car radio, there's that weird...